हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनाभुनक्तु सह वीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सनि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
श्रील प्रभुपाद की जय हो। Hey, now my mantra is 6 to 8. So this is on the Mahabhagavata's vision. Mantra 6. Mantra 6 describes the characteristics of the pure devotee. The Mahabhagavat sees everything in connection to the Lord, sees all living beings as his parts and parcels, and sees him within everything. Such kind of spiritual vision is a private domain of the advanced transcendentalist. It is achieved by following the disciplic succession, and it cannot be imitated by mundane people. Srila Prabhupada stresses on the word anupashyati, which means that one should follow the previous acharyas, rather than rely on his material vision. His divine grace explains the difference between the three levels of devotees, Kanishtha, Madhyama, and Uttama. The Kanishtha devotees go to the temple, church, or mosque, but they think that the Lord is present only there. The Kanishthas cannot properly estimate the spiritual advancement of other devotees. They follow mechanically different rituals and sometimes quarrel amongst themselves, considering one type of devotion better than another. The Madhyama devotees can discriminate between four classes and interact with them accordingly. The Mahabhagavat devotee does not discriminate between different material categories, but sees everyone as part and parcel of God. He tries to do good for all, regardless of their present position and activities. Yeah. So this means, since what we're dealing with is actually vision, like Shastra Chakshus, then this is actually a very important approach to establishing, you know, the standards or the hierarchy of Krishna conscious development. Is that it depends on how much you can see Krishna in something. Right, so now it's natural someone with faith, a place of worship, they will be inspired there. They'll have some faith that something's happening here, that, you know, that the religion, the rituals are going on, prayer is being offered, the Lord is being, you know, pleased, like that. So that aspect then anyone can appreciate. But the difficulty is outside of the church they don't see this. Outside of the place of worship they don't see in this vision. So then it makes it difficult is that they're unable to connect everything really nicely to Krishna. Some things are there they can do, you know, something to do with their food or a few other things, then that pictures some things then they're able to do. But in a really broad way, it becomes very difficult. And in the same way as they only see God in the place of worship, then it also is when they leave the place of worship, their interaction with the other members of the faith may also not be very strong, right? And that. So then there'll be in-house fighting amongst the faithful, simply because they only see basically God in the performance of ritual. And that's all that is there. Then there'll also be the problem where they'll come up as, oh, they'll be fighting over which ritual is better than another, right? Which form of devotion is better, all these different things. So, and it's basically connected to what is important to them. You know, it's not that you're detailing with the scripture and showing that there's a natural hierarchy, but you're working on the principle of, I like this kind of worship, so therefore everybody should do it. Right? I like prayer, everybody should be doing that. Or I like to offer obeisances, everybody should be doing that. Or I like deity worship, if you're not doing that, you're not advancing, or, you know, whatever it is that you take as what you feel inspires yourself to be professing that that's the important thing to do because of that, that's a problem. Does that make sense? That's a problem. If it's because the scriptures are there, then it's a discussion of that. But what's the need to establish it unless it comes up as a discussion? Or there somebody is making a mistake. Does that make sense? So all these different things then show the symptoms of the neophyte element, that what they are absorbed in, only that's important. Right? It's not that they have to get themselves absorbed in so many other things. No, they're absorbed in what they're absorbed in, but others have the other absorption, and that's fine. As long as it's, you know, consistent with, you know, the decrees of Shastra, right? Then there shouldn't be any difficulty. The Madhyama is able to make this distinction, is able to take God from the temple out into his lifestyle. He's able to distinguish between the different levels of personalities and to be able to deal nicely in that way. Right? Those who are senior, those who are equal, those who are junior, he's able to have the proper relationship with all of them. And then the Uttam, he just sees all persons and all things in connection with Krishna directly. So then he doesn't have any problem of this. So in the temple or out of the temple, you know, he's performing the same activities. So it's, for him, it's not a difficulty like that. So then they don't see any, you know, cultural or any other any obstacles in the way of interaction. So therefore they get along with everybody. Right? The Madhyamas, they get along very nicely, but they'll also choose those situations that are not good association, that may be avoided. But the Uttama, you know, they don't see any inappropriate situation, because everything is somehow or another Krishna's energy and connected. Does this make sense? Right. Mantra 7. By following bona fide authority, anupashyati, one realizes that a living being's parts are parts and parcels of the Lord. Thus he is freed from illusion. Right? Footnote, the same method and result are described in Bhagavad Gita. Just try to learn the truth by approaching a spiritual master. Inquire from him submissively and render service unto him. The self-realized souls can impart knowledge unto you because they have seen the truth. So this seeing means seeing through the eyes of Shastra. If it can be more than that also, then that's very nice. Does that make sense? This scene doesn't mean that unless you have face-to-face seen Bhagavan Krishna right there and you can go up and touch him, that they're not advanced. That is a neophyte speaking. That's another symptom. Because Krishna is seen through so many aspects, right? According to Shastra, according to Prabhupada, Nishta Bhakti, that is the beginning of advanced devotional service. So if somebody is situated in Nishta, they're advanced. Right? So the point is that you see through the eyes of Shastra. You are able to, what Shastra says, you are able to see that. And when you look at things, you look at it with the vision of what the Shastra says. Right? That is seeing. Now whether you're seeing simply on the Brahman level, on the Paramatma level, or the Bhagavan level, as far as realization, right? Then that will be more advancement. You appreciate Krishna's potencies, how it's working, how his creation is functioning. Then that Brahman aspect is there with Paramatma to some degree, right? Krishna's in the heart, he's in the heart of every living entity, he's controlling everything, making everything work, you know, making all these arrangements for the living entities, like that, then that's more on the Paramatma level. We understand that Krishna, he is doing all these things. It's because of his desire to reestablish relationships with the living entities. So he, as a person, as Bhagavan, how he then has expanded his energies and done all this, then that's Bhagavan. That makes sense? But the point is at some level, that appreciation is there, that vision is there. Right? Then if we argue, oh, well, that's not so advanced, you know. like that. Does that make sense? You know, oh, we're talking about this. Oh, that's, excuse me, but that's, you know, mixed devotional service. You know, we don't care for mixed devotional service. So, but the point is the person who raised their hand, what are they in? So then this is what is talked about. That they use one aspect of devotional service against the other. Like that. Oh, we're not jnanis. Yeah, but we're not karmis either. You know, better, you know, you're just jnani, better you do something practical for Krishna. But then you're saying that one part of the same process is better than the other. That's like arguing over, you know, this pot's useless. The spoon is the real thing that makes the cooking happen, right? If you just put the vegetables in the pot, one side will get cooked or burnt and the other side won't. So it's the spoon that makes it all happen. So get rid of this pot. What's this pot nonsense? We just need a spoon to cook with. This is actually what's going on, right? So this is the meaning of neophytes, and they're pitting one aspect of devotional service against another simply because that's where they have some understanding or that's where they have some interest. So that's not so important, right? Okay. Yeah. And so it's here, just try to learn the truth by approaching a spiritual master. That means you want to know what the absolute truth is. Then you'll try, it says, by approaching means you have to make that endeavor. You have to take that step that you want to hear. Then inquire submissively means, first of all, you've had to heard, right? You have a question, you hear, but then you hear that. Then, and render service, that means then you have to take that instruction and apply it, right? Then the thing works. So it's the same thing as tad vidhi pratipateta parivarshane. It means you're having that interest, and so therefore you're wanting to know how to make the instruction work. Therefore, it's the inquiry. Having inquired, then you apply it. That application will give you more understanding, but at the same time, it will create more questions. So then those are then asked again. And so like this, the cycle then develops very nicely. Right? So then this is then what Prabhupada's talking about. This is anupashyati. With this attitude, then actually the spiritual will work very nicely, right? Because the cyclic succession is not this that you're connected there, that you've taken initiation there. Like those who are, you know, professing the Diksha Pranali lines, that the Diksha line is the most important. But actually for us it's the Siksha line, because it's the following in the footsteps. You get instruction, you apply that instruction, you make advancement. That you've been initiated into a line, very nice, very good. You know, but if you follow the instruction of that line, that would be better, right? So this aspect then is being brought out. The spiritual position of the living being is perceived only by Madhyama and Uttama Adhikari devotees. The Mahabhagavata devotee sees oneness in the sense that he sees everything as energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So the Madhyama will perceive various levels, while the Uttama just sees this pure spirit soul. You know, they may be covered by these other things and act in these other ways, but that's secondary. That doesn't mean they see them in that light, right? They can adjust with that light and deal with that. Just like, you know, Shukadev Goswami is seeing all the living entities as parts and parcels of the Lord. And, you know, so everything is situated on the Brahman platform. But it doesn't mean you can't tell the difference between, you know, tree Brahman and, you know, footpath Brahman. Does that make sense? So he'll deal accordingly, just as he moves. But he's basically just seeing the soul. So it's not that the other things actually are that important, unless it's important to that living entity you're dealing with. You know what I'm saying? Sukadeva Swami is walking along. All the boys are there, you know, laughing and joking and pointing and all that. So he just sees them as pure spirit souls, so there's no problem, right? But in their conditioned state, then they like to, you know, goof and laugh at him. So that's their need. So it doesn't bother him because he has no social needs to fulfill. So if he can be of some service to other living entities by being a laughing stock for them, then fine. They're pleased. He's not disturbed, and so everything goes very nicely. You know, everything goes very well. So there's no problem. Does that make sense? So relationships go very well, right? So it shows the less ego, the better things go. There is a oneness between the living beings and the Lord because they have identical interests. The living beings can be happy only in connection with the Lord, and the Lord, although independent, derives pleasure from the devotional activities of the individual souls. So this means the oneness that's there, because if you're going to have a relationship, there must be a common point. Right? So this common point, because of common interests, that's what's going to make activity. You have a field of activity. Everybody's in the same field, basically. But now, what is of interest to you in that field, that is going to determine what action you perform. Right? So if you have common interests, that means ultimately the actions will be common. Because if the interest is common, the need will be common, therefore the action will be common. Right? So therefore, it's put on the common interest, right? The Lord wants to interact with the devotee wants to, you know, please the Lord. So this common interest then makes for the devotional exchange. Right? So that's the oneness. So when the acharyas also, when they talk about oneness, like Ramanuja or, who was the other one? Is it Vishnuswami? Then that oneness, special oneness or purified oneness, means this aspect, is that there's a common mood, a common desire, like that. Because otherwise you're dealing with Brahman. So you have the unlimited Brahman and you have limited Brahman. But still is Brahman. But the commonality isn't Brahman, because technically everything's Brahman. Right? So then it's just a matter of the interest, that is actually what makes the commonality. Because the Lord in Vaikuntha has a certain interest. The devotees there have the same interest. Therefore, they're in Vaikuntha. Right? Krishna has different interests in Dwarka. And the devotees also have those interests. Therefore, they're in Dwarka. Or the interests of Krishna in Vrindavan are different. Therefore, the residents of Vrindavan, their interests match that. They're in Vrindavan. But as far as Brahman goes, it's all Brahman. So it's that's not the common element we're taking. Otherwise, why are they stressing the Vishishta or Vishuddha aspect of oneness? Right. So that's that's the viewpoint that they're taking. So that then means then the whole process works very nicely. Right? As Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur is explaining, is that this whole devotional process then is developing because of this interaction between the Lord and the devotee. Right? That's very important, is that the Lord wants to interact. So the problem of the living entity being in the material world is the living entity in the material world is not interested in interacting with God. Because God has interest to interact with the living entity, that's going on right now in every living entity's life in the material world. Krishna is interacting with them through his energies. But because they don't recognize it, therefore they do not reciprocate that approach. Does that make sense? But Krishna keeps making that approach. Right? He is making all the arrangements, he's doing it, it's his energies you're working with. Any experience you're getting is actually coming from him. Any energy or ability you're able to do is coming from him. All the results that are there are coming from him. The methods to get those results are coming from him. Right? So everything is him. But the illusion is we don't recognize it. Therefore, there's no relationship. It means in our mind, it's there. It's just like the person may be in some kind of state of mind due to something, some temporary insanity or illness or something. They don't recognize the people around them. The people around them deal with them. Here's our relative. You know, they take care of them, feed them, pay the bills, do all the stuff. But the other person doesn't realize this. Right? But that doesn't mean the relationship doesn't exist. It just means you can't actually interact in the natural, pleasing way that would be there in that relationship. Right, so something else is there. So Krishna is dealing with us, even though we don't recognize his dealings, his position. Right? It doesn't mean the relationship's not there. The words ekatvam anupashyata indicate that one should understand the unity of all souls from the viewpoint of the revealed scriptures. The unity of interest between the living entities exists because they belong to the same big family, nityo nityanam chetanas chetananam eko bahunam yo vidhati kaman. The modern attempts to bring harmony in society are based on speculative theories and lead only to misery and despair. Quote, a godless civilization arises from illusion, and the result of such a civilization is lamentation. A godless civilization, such as that sponsored by the modern politicians, is always full of anxieties because it may be crushed at any moment. Sri Ishupanishad, Mantra 7, Purport. Means is that since it's being run by God and it's all going on by God, therefore, if one simply accepts his position in this, in other words, it's a theistic civilization, then one can find solutions to any problem that's there by taking into consideration the picture of God and the living entities and his and the material energy. If you don't do that, you can't have a complete solution. The solution will never be. Anyone who is not basing it on the scriptures, is not basing it on a God conscious, cannot come up with a complete solution. It's not possible. It never has. It's not going on now. Even though there's more facility, there's more McDonald's, there's more jeans, there's more all of everything that everybody thinks is very important in the modern society. People are free to do what they like. Anybody can do anything, go anywhere, you know, all that. But is the happiness increasing? That's the thing. You can just observe it. It's not. People are more and more frustrated. More and more here, misery and despair. More and more anxiety. So all these things have not created the happiness that is expected to. Right? Some new invention comes out, everybody talks about it, wow, this would be great, wouldn't that be fantastic, with the idea of why? You'll be happier. But once it gets out, hits the street and everything like that, people buy it, are they actually happier? Right? Maybe a little bit in one way, but then some other problem comes up. Right? In any case, anything always has this difficulty. So, because there's not a connection with God consciousness, one is not able to technically connect everything to Krishna. Therefore, there's a problem. Right? It's not a matter of, it's not practical. It's a matter of, if we're looking at it from this point of vision, Krishna's already running everything anyway. So then, if you recognize that he's doing that, it would go a lot nicer. Isn't it? The person's in the hospital, not interacting, so when they open their eyes and recognize you and start having their natural relationship, doesn't things get better? So why wouldn't it here? Right? Why wouldn't it now? Where we stubbornly try to somehow or another give a value to the modern society that is so much more important than God, his creation, and God's managing his creation. God's managing his creation right now, that you're breathing. Who's doing that? God's arranging it. That there's air to breathe, he's arranging that. Right? What does modern civilization do for your air? They pollute it. So then how is it that they have the solution? This is Maya. Very simple Maya. I thought. So the idea is if we just recognize how Krishna's hand is in everything anyway. It's not that you're having to, Prabhupada says it's not an artificial imposition on the mind. It's what's already going on. It's just recognizing it, right? The mother and father are managing the house. The kid runs around, doesn't recognize anything. So it's always a problem. But as soon as the kid recognizes, hey, there's a family here, there's some order in here, there's some authority here, then the whole thing starts to work more nicely. But in the kid's mind, they can say, well, there is no authority. Whatever I want, that's what should happen, and this and that. He can go on like that. But the reality is, there's a family there. So this is what's going on. So this concept that there's something other than God's creation and His laws, it's only illusion. Right? Sadhana means we're not perfect. And we're trying to become perfect. But words coming out of our mouth like, oh, it doesn't apply now, and it doesn't, you know, have anything to do, oh, it's archaic, or it's old, oh, what is this Vedic anyway? It's just Indian. All this is just illusion. Because right now, this roof is staying up and not falling on our heads because God's holding it up. And now we're going to say He's redundant because, you know, Obama's the president? Does this make sense? What has changed? All that's changed is our mentality, our ability to see God in everything. That's all that's changed. Nothing else has changed. So just because a lot of people are atheistic doesn't mean that now there's a different solution to the problem. Right? Because the problem is individual. You become God conscious, you solve your problem. It doesn't matter if one person, you know, is not God conscious or the whole world's not God conscious, you solve your problem by becoming God conscious. Right? And it's your consciousness that's the problem, not the other things, not whether you can get, you know, proper, you know, food or not, or dress or not. That's not what we're talking about. It's consciousness. You change the consciousness, everything else adjusts. Everything else adjusts. And it does mention that the advanced person likes to live where Krishna is. That was one of the symptoms given by Rupa Goswami of, you know, the platform of Bhava, is that he likes to be in the Lord's Dham. Right? So that means the Lord, his Dham, his associates, what he does, everything like that. You know, it's natural. You know, someone joins a club. Why? Because then they have something that you can connect with. So, you know, your ski club, so you have your ski clothes, you talk about your skis, your those fun little things that you hold yourself up with, you know, your goggles, your this, that, your jacket, your socks, or whatever it is that makes importance to them. And so they talk the same talk, they have their vocabulary, they have their dress, they have their places they hang out, they have all the things they do. Why? Because then that's because they like that. So if you like Krishna, then naturally the same thing happens. You like being in his place with his devotees, talking about his activities, you know, whatever we can do and connect ourselves with it, take his prasad, you know, wear his garlands, all these different things, and we like to do that. It's just natural. Right? So to say other side, otherwise that's not understanding human nature. Right? It's not understanding human nature. So it's very, very simple. Very simple, straightforward things. That not accepting the scriptures, not accepting Krishna's authority in that is atheism. That's all. Right? But that's what we come with. So sometimes we still have those tinges. But that's what we're looking for. How to remove the non-devotional element within our heart at all times, all places, all circumstances. So in everything that we do, in all our relationships, we're not leaving God out of it. And therefore, then the quality of it is good. The spiritual realm, everything's connected to Krishna. And as we see, it seems to work pretty good. We hear the pastimes are quite nice. The interactions are quite affectionate, loving. Everyone feels secure. Right? All the difficulties of the modern society are gone. Yes.
Sometimes ignorance is mistaken for spiritual advancement. Person who is able to live and tolerate any kind of situation is considered as more advanced, and a spiritual person should not get upset, disturbed, or...
You've been on the Bengali buses, I take it.
Bombay trains.
Bombay trains, yes. Then if you get upset, you're a sadhu, why are you getting upset?
I haven't done the buses yet.
What, if you're a grihastha, why are you harassing the sadhus? Just testing. Who are you to test? Like that, yeah, like that. You can go on for quite a while with them that way. You get to the next stop and like
so that. Once one gets more spiritually advanced, one doesn't mind the crowds and the smells and the whole...
It means you're dealing with different layers of things. One is, why are you on that train in the first place? You want to distribute books. But that method, why was the train picked? You know what I'm saying? So if it's picked because you like the adventure, you like the crowds, the energy, the excitement, you know, you're going to get on that train, you know, despite the other, you know, 10,000 that want to get on also, those kind of things, then you'll find as you advance, then that's not so important anymore. Then that inspiration to use the train goes away. So then that side won't be inspirational. So if it's simply a matter of, well, this is the only way to get to where I have to distribute the book, then that's where the tolerance will come. Yeah.
I distribute on the train, so it's okay, I don't mind it. But if I live in a place like Mayapur, I try to avoid the crowds and the pollution and the noise and the garbage, but then somehow it's India, so it's hard to...
It's hard to avoid. It's hard. It's just a matter also just what you're used to. Because you go to the West, it has a similar kind of thing. But it's just a slightly different flavor, you know, like that. So it's just, it's natural because it says in the Gita, and I think it was 13.8, where it gives the 20 symptoms of knowledge. Then one of them is not wanting to be in the crowd. You know what I'm saying? So... many people like being in the crowd because it's happening, there's energy, it's not boring, it's exciting. And so that aspect of being in the crowd, that goes away. If you need to be in the crowd for service, you'll be in the crowd. But it's not that you have an attraction to be in the crowd because something's happening. You know? Like that. That kind of a thing. That's not, you know, you have the, you know, like I noticed in the West, so many jams happen because there's an accident. And there's no blockage at all. The car's not even on the road. But everybody slows down to look. And everybody wants to be in that looking. You know, so you get stopped on the highway for hours. You know, whatever it's like. Well, in India, of course, you know, dime a dozen, they drive by 10 accidents on the way to Calcutta, so it's no big deal, you know. You know, might go by, ooh, that one's a good one. You know, that's it. But you don't slow down. You know, so this interest to be in the crowd and that because of its excitement, that will go away. But for association, for worshiping the Lord, for service, then one will be there, you know, and whatever is advantageous, you'll take advantage of that, and whatever is not advantageous, but, you know, a necessary part of, you know, just the environment means it's not going to go away. That then you learn to tolerate. So if someone is tolerant in this and that, that's a good quality. It's a pious quality. They may already come with that. So that's good. It has its advantages in Krishna consciousness. So then it can be used, but it's not itself specifically a symptom. But if one is practicing and that is there, then generally it means it's coming up from it. One, you know, it's one of the qualities of knowledge. So then, by it means, what is it? Gyan and Vairag come by devotional service. So this is one of the aspects of knowledge that's coming. You know, so as knowledge, he doesn't have that. He doesn't see the need for being so socially involved. And the Vairag means he's lost that interest. But, you know, so then if you need to be out in the crowd, you will, and if you won't, you won't be.
So from an external point of view, indifference, like in the case of Shukadeva Goswami, and spiritual advancement is perceived as to be the same.
Can be, but you have to see what it's based on. What is the indifference based on? Like, let's say, the person is, you know, kind of more of a social event. You know, they're indifferent to a lot of people. But that indifference isn't actually their advancement. It's due to their ego. Because they think they're so special, and they have such attitude about how special they are that if somebody's not doing what they're doing, then they're not even worth talking to. So there's an indifference there. So that kind of indifference is not, because it's based on ignorance. But an indifference where, because indifference means generally our usage of indifference means it's in the negative. But the Vedic usage of indifference is in the positive. Indifference means if you have to be in a crowd or not in a crowd, you're okay with it. You know, so it's like you're comfortable in either because you're going to do your service. You know, so it's like, you know, you're driving a Sankirtan bus and this and that, and then somehow or another there's a temple there, so you can stay in the temple and they have nice facilities, so that's nice. You know, and then the next time you're out, then, you know, you guys got to sleep under a tree. So it doesn't matter. You're going to go out, you're going to do your service. That's the Vedic indifference. But indifference meaning it's kind of has the element of repulsion to it. That's based on ignorance. That's not the indifference that we're interested in. It's a different kind of indifference.
Or if a person doesn't wear proper clothes in the wintertime and gets sick because he thinks he's very austere, so he doesn't need to wear almost anything, so that would also be based on ignorance.
Based on ignorance, because austerity means the proper performance of your duty. Means you do have the element of austerity, meaning that there's some physical discomfiture. And that if you properly perform your duty, you're accepting those good and comfortable and uncomfortable aspects of body, mind, and words of your duty. So therefore, your duty already includes the natural austerities that you're supposed to follow. So one can add more austerity onto that if it's your duty. Like vanaprasthas could do that. Like that, sometimes people go like a Kumbh Mela, they take vows. I know there's one, I think it was one Madhvaswami he was doing where he only keeps one set of cloth. And so then when he goes and takes bath in the morning at the Ganga, then he'll wash his clothes then, wring them out, and put them on. And then basically they'll, drip dry, yes, you know, during the day. But it's an austerity that he's taking, and it's something that he can do, and it won't affect his service. He'll still be able to do his puja and this and that and all the different things. So then it's nice, it controls the senses, but only because he's a sannyasi, so therefore he would be controlling the senses, something there. He's at Kumbh Mela, so he's performing a brata. They're there for 41 days. They don't just go for, you know, just the bath. They go for the full mandala. So then they can do these things. So it's part of the duty, like that. But if it's not actually part of the duty, and one gets sick, and therefore affects your health and your service, that's not your duty, because the body is also to be maintained properly to use in Krishna's service. So you have to keep it. If keeping it warm is how you're going to do it, that's part. That is, in other words, the austerity is keeping it warm. It's very easy to just get up in the morning and walk out without your warm clothes on. It's more difficult to put them all on. You know, and then when you come back in the house, take them off, and then when you go out, put them back on. That's more austere. Like that. It's easy. Because otherwise, if that was an actual symptom of austerity, then basically all the, you know, small kids in our community would be great sages. You know, because they'll happily run out of the house with no clothes on and, you know, put themselves in all kinds of very austere, you know, situations like, you know, mud and, you know, bramble bushes and falling out of trees and, you know, running through crowds of people, you know, and bumping into everything. I mean, that means very austere if we take all those symptoms, you know, like that. Is that okay? Yeah. Does that make sense? So it's very important. It's what Prabhupada's saying here, it's the godlessness. He's not saying civilization. He's saying godless civilization, because contemporary And I say, well, it's hard to how they define the words. But what is going on now in the world doesn't necessarily mean modern. Modern is something that's always been there. Even in the Vedic age, they had modern people. Right? They had traditional people, they had modern people. They always have had them. Manu and Manusamhita defines modern. Very clear. One verse. Modern means that which is not based on the scriptures. That's modern. Because if it's based on scripture, it's eternal. Scripture is eternal. Action based on the scripture is eternal. Modern means it's temporary. If it's not based on scripture, it will change. Whatever's happening today, tomorrow, there'll be a different idea because there's nothing to keep it, maintain a consistency.
Like that.
So that's all it is. If it's modern, so they say, oh, but in this modern society simply means a society that doesn't accept God's authority in the form of the scriptures. That's all. So in that society, yes, it's there, but how do you change that society? You simply change the mentality. And because the process is self-realization, you don't have to change the whole world to change yourself. Right? You can change yourself, and everything else stays as it is. Right? Isn't it? So it's something different. People who are, you know, accepted by, you know, the common man as saints and other things, what made them different? They did something that no one else was interested in. They just did it themselves. Right? They became spiritual. They became God conscious. Right? Or some leaders. Why are they special? They were just another person. But they decided to do something. Right? So when an individual decides, I'm going to do this, whether anybody else does it or not, they naturally are a leader of society. That's just the position. Everybody else thinks this is special. Because common man means he's common. Nothing special. Nothing out of the ordinary. Right? But the Vedic society is designed that it's made up of everybody's special. Because everybody takes the, you know, the scriptures and God consciousness into their life. And those that don't, the less they do that, the more ordinary they become. Right? Like that. So it's very simple. So it's this concept that there's this overwhelming force that's there that nothing can happen. No, that force is within yourself. There's nothing from outside. Like that. It's simply within ourselves. That illusion. So when we give up that illusion by our knowledge, our practice, our association, then the illusion's gone. Right? It doesn't exist anymore. Like that. So that's the whole point. So it doesn't bother you. You know what I'm saying? Here, you have, just take this for example. You have a saintly person, right? Krishna himself has personally come to try to convince him that, you know, being born isn't that bad, you know? Like that. His father is Vyasadeva, also an incarnation of the Lord, right? And he's on the Brahman platform, and now he's come to the devotional platform. But he's acting as an Uttamadhikari, so his external behavior will look like the, you know, Brahman realized person. And he's one, so such an elevated person, he deserves to be respected by the three worlds, right? But he's walking down the street, and the boys are following him and chasing him and making all kinds of comments and, you know, laughing at him and things like that. Someone would say, oh, this is so degraded, so this and that, how we can function. No, he was functioning. You know, and that was 5,000 years ago. Right? The Yuvantipur Brahmin, he's a sannyasi. Right? He's out there. He's a Dandi sannyasi. He's out there. He's gone begging and all that. And he's outside the village. He sits down, you know, puts down his danda, offers his prayers to eat what he's begged. And then the local punks come along and they take his stick and start poking him with it. They pass urine on what he begged. You got that problem? Right? Anyone's ever had that problem? No. He goes on, that was 5,000 years ago, and now we're saying it's different today? So, that's my point. What is different? Lord Chaitanya, he was right here in this spot. What was the government? Nice Krishna conscious Rajarshis. Right? Moguls who were working to destroy the Vedic culture. Right? He wasn't living in a democracy where they allowed any religion to happen. Here was the Hindus stayed out of the way, didn't make too much trouble, they left them alone. They made too much trouble, they came in, they broke their mridangas, they created trouble. Right? And that's on this side. Right? Vrindavan's side, they were a little bit more enthusiastic. You know, they had a quota. They also had their Samkirtan quotas. You know, the police would go out in the morning and they had to come back with a certain amount in weight of Brahmin threads. So that meant that the Brahmin either voluntarily gave up that Brahmin thread and became a Muslim, or they killed him. That was what their duty was. And it wasn't like, you know, come back with one thread. It was in, they weigh it in kilos. Right? So you got that going on now? No. So what is it that's so special about today? Because McDonald's is there, we can't be Krishna conscious. Because Levi Strauss is there, and now so many other people have caught on and put some fancy pockets on the side, you know, like that. Or, you know, what is it that makes it that we can't be Krishna conscious? You know, I can't buy any plain t-shirts. They all have something written on them, so I can't be Krishna conscious. You know, what is it? You know what I'm saying? Rice doesn't cook anymore. Dal doesn't cook. Chapatis won't cook anymore. Vegetables definitely don't cook anymore. Like that. You know, what is it? You know what I'm saying? That's the thing. There isn't anything. It's all in our own mind. And of course, we get a few minds together and have a little caucus there, then we naturally think that, yes, this is true. Like that. But it's no more true. If 100 people say it, or 1 people say it, it doesn't become any more true. Like that. So this is the whole point, is that it has to come back to this Ishvasya principle. Right? So this vision that these great devotees have, that can be very helpful in us getting that faith that we can function on this platform. Right? We can do it despite the situation. Like that. Despite whatever's going on, then it's there. How are we doing? Oh, we're almost done. Okay, so these anything other than Krishna consciousness, so basically last point we'll make on this, then is that a solution that doesn't include Krishna consciousness isn't actually a solution. It may get something immediately done, but because it's not connected to the eternal, it won't give any lasting result. That's the problem. You're dealing with troubleshooting, it's superficial. It will immediately get rid of that immediate, observable detail of the trouble, but it doesn't necessarily mean that whatever is causing the trouble has gone away. Right? The people are rioting over here. Send in some people. Get rid of that. Then you can feel we've solved the problem. No, the problem. Why are the people rioting in the first place? What is it that they're disturbed about? What is it would bring them to that point? Because common people are generally like to stay to themselves. You know, they don't like to get together and put themselves physically in danger or be able to be, you know, taken by the police. So what would bring them to that point of emotion that they'd get out and riot? So something must be really wrong for that to happen. That's where your problem is. So these kind of things, but that's because they're not being supported. They're being exploited. They're not all these things. So that is what the Shastra says a leader is supposed to take care of, the protection of the people. So if they're not protected, naturally these things are going to come up. So to come up with some godless solution is not going to work. Because the people are only going to be happy if they're protected. That's God's law. So if you find some other thing, it's still not going to work. It won't work. Does this make sense? So, yeah. So here we can see is that this whole concept of the philosophy goes into everything. Because God is, if he's pervading everything, which generally everybody accepts, that means the philosophy pervades everything. The culture pervades everything. So there's a connection to Krishna, to everything in our life. Like that. So seeing that, understanding that, then that's what the Upanishad is then explaining. Right? It's explaining how to do this. Right? But we start that with the mentality. Right? You adjust the mentality, then you know it's easy enough to follow the externals, the physical aspects of the sadhana. Right? That's not a difficult thing to know what to do. Most important is the mentality. The mentality is there, then the physical comes very easily. Right? If you're in a particular mood, you're willing to put your body through anything to get it. Right? But if you're not in the mood, the body doesn't move. So if we're discussing, I don't want to do these things with the body, means I don't have the attitude in which I'm willing to do that. So that's why we see, as the Upanishad is essence of the Vedic literature, that then is getting to the point specifically of the attitude. Like that. The form will come after. You get the attitude, very easy to establish the form. Like that. You don't have the attitude, then it'll be harder to establish the form. Or maybe not even interesting to establish the form. Okay? So we'll end here.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki, Jayanitai Gaura Premanandi.